Okay, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Dow where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
Now, funny how? I mean, funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the is so funny about me? Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Hockey. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We have Mr. Kevin O'Neill with us as well. We have 30 more days. 30 days, Matty, for trying to break out of jail in jail. Illinois. S&P futures up 18. Dow futures down 130, up 135. NASDAQ futures up 38. Kevin, how are you? 30 more days. 30 more days.
30 more days for you. I live in Michigan. We don't know yet. We may stay locked up forever.
Yeah. It's the policy without seemingly without any sort of anything behind it, but we've got a policy and we're sticking to it and we're getting worse. So I've never seen so many decisions made by so many people taking away so many rights that I don't think they have any idea what they're flying blind, and they were flying blind in December and they're flying blind now. And I don't understand why we're still blind when everybody else seems to be doing better on testing and everything else and has a better feel for things. We don't. I still don't see any.
Well, and we keep pointing back to data. You know, wow, we're gonna. It's the science. It's the data. First of all, in Trump's case, you know, he got criticized for not listening to the science people, and his downfall may very well be that he listened to the science.
I'm with you 100% there. Yeah.
You know, we keep pointing at the data, and time after time, the models are wrong, and. Is, you know, the biggest contradiction that I can see at this point, because you can look at the original models and say, well, it was our mitigation efforts that made it work out better. If you want to say that, then why on earth did we build all that extra capacity if the models told us that the mitigation efforts wouldn't require us to build out McCormick Place or the Javits Center or any of the or State Fair Park in Milwaukee or any of those other places. Why did we go to that much trouble if the model said lock in place is gonna solve this? So they didn't know what the cure was gonna do. The cure was a guess. We don't know if the impact was a bad guess. I guess we're starting to get a lot of science that says it is, or a lot of data that says it is. But you know, if the impact wasn't a bad guess, then the cure was a bad guess.
But the decision making made by individuals, and this has been many, and I go back and forth about this all the time. When you hire people or you elect people of dubious quality, you're going to get dubious. I mean, that's just what you're going to get. And then you make people afraid. I guess me being even more bitter and bitter about this by the day is that I get letters from people constantly here. I mean, as you people can probably imagine. Yesterday I get one from a guy. His mother's in a nursing home, I believe in New Jersey, and they tell him. By the way, your mother just tested positive for COVID. She's not doing very well. You can't come see her. So these bleeps let somebody who probably, and of course, what they're going to try and tell you is that it was a visitor to one of the old people. And I can't say that it was or wasn't, because I surely wasn't there. But everything people started to send me say that the big invasion into the nursing homes were people who also worked at hospitals, got it working there, and then brought it to the nursing home. That it was the employees in the nursing home in a lot of the cases. Not, you can never say that every case or anything like that. But, so let me get this straight. They let the disease in the door. We're not talking about 2 months ago. We're talking about like 2 days ago she got the thing. They had the, didn't have the protocols to keep it out after everybody's known about it. And now the solution is for him not to be able to go see her. That to me, Kevin, is one of the, this can't be America. Nobody could be that stupid. I mean, what? We're afraid of him getting it?
Yes, we can.
let me get this straight. Your horse has been stolen. You can't come check out the barn. Okay. You can't come pick up his bucket and stuff from his stall, from your horse that's now gone. Because we're worried about security. Wait a minute, it's a little late for that, isn't it? Just saying. But I mean,
there are so many missteps in here, and I don't know if you and I are going to be around when the real history about it is written, but it is not going to be a pretty story.
No, I don't. When this thing first happened. And I started reading about this, and again, I will say this flat out, and again, I cannot say unequivocally that there were no studies here. Every study people sent me was from overseas. The rigorous stuff that people actually were following, people that had it, and, you know, did the temperature by the day, all the stuff that what happens to individuals, I haven't read any of that here. Any, like, real news. Now, I'm sure in our hospitals and so forth, we have really good people, and they're doing this stuff, but somehow, it hasn't made its way to me, is all I'll say. My thought was, what if we do all this crap, put the economy underground, and yet it turns out this disease is too big for us. It is the common cold, and everybody gets it anyway. God, we don't want that. Let that happen. And yet, it seems to me that's right where we're going. Now, we're not. If the latest test in New York, or the latest sample, which, again, Kevin, you and I have a little bit of a statistics background. Not like our man yesterday, Kevin, or Matty. Was that guy terrific? I would never want to debate statistics with that guy. Chris, so was it Chris Conley?
Conlon, yep.
Conlon. I mean, he was, anyway, so the latest test in New York, Kevin, if you saw, is that 13.5% of the population has already had it. Now, of course, you can say the people that went for that test probably were people who maybe thought they already had it because they want to confirm it with the whatever. So yeah, it's not the most random test on earth. But I would like to see, Jay, who seems to be buffeted by those around him, as everybody is, I guess, say, okay, we're going to do this for another month. And by the way, the last week in May, we're going to do this test here, a random sample in Illinois, to see how many people in the various counties here have it, because by then we're going to have these antibody tests up and going pretty well. And if that number reaches 25%, we're going to say that we're going to start opening stuff up because we have bent the curve just by people already having it, which is not the best way to get there, but it is a way to get there. There's nothing. We're just closing for another 30 days and see what happens. And one of our I won't say crazier dudes, but he likes sending me everything, and he's a little bit on the right wing side, but doesn't make him bad, Kevin. He's one of the biggest rifts in this country now, forming by the day, by the hour. You're seeing it in Michigan, you're seeing it in Pennsylvania, and you're going to see it everywhere. Are those people,
Wisconsin too?
Yes. Are those people that are forced to stay at home, that either are still paying leases on a place or are not getting paid, versus all the bleeps that Jay surrounds himself with that are getting paid? I mean, one of my buddies calls me yesterday and he goes, the teachers there, instead of, you know, leaving at their house at 7 and coming home at 4:30, are now doing class for his kid from like 9 to 10:15, and then from like 1 to 2 from home. He's all the indirect people, the assistant principals, all those people still getting full paychecks. You think they're unhappy that they canceled the school year? I mean, there are teachers that are dedicated. Don't get me wrong, that are probably really upset that they aren't in class because that's their life's work. But you
I fall into that category. So. But you know what? First of all, I'm not typical of the faculty in that I came out of industry for way over 40 years. So that I am used to going to the office every day. When I didn't have to go to the office every day, I went to the office every day.
That's like me too. You get the habit.
Because it's who I am. It's what I do. But aside from that, I can do the distance learning. I can do it really well. I've done it before. I've incorporated it into classes many a time. But it's not the same. For my purposes, what I miss is, of all the things I do in my job, all the administrative stuff, all the preparation, everything about program building and building alliances and working with the schools and all that, the best part, the parts that's pure gold, is being in the classroom.
Yeah, we're also dealing with adults. But I'm talking about, if you're dealing with kids, 90% in some time, the reason why I feel this way is I remember my mother. Most people remember their mothers. My mom taught me so much about everything, it's scary. Not just as when you were young growing up, how to cut your toenails and stuff, other things. I'm saying she was a brilliant lady, read her whole life, went to class though when she was 80, at St. Xavier, she'd do the adult night stuff. But she told me she grew up during a depression. And she goes, when you went to school, it was get you out of the house, teach you stuff. She said they learned everything at school. The teachers didn't assume you knew anything. They taught you how to cut your fingernails. They taught you how to wash your hands. They taught you how to wash your face. Cleanliness, all those kinds of things they taught you at school, because they knew you, there was no shred of an idea of homework, because they knew you weren't getting any help at home. And by the way, your mother or father probably had a store or did some stuff and you had to help them. So the thought that you would send, kids from the ghetto homework never even crossed their mind. You had the kid from 6 hours. That was your 6 hours to make difference in the life of that kid. Now the attitude now, I don't know what the attitude is, but the idea that in 60% of the neighborhoods in this city, that these students are like your students, where A, is even a computer at home, or B, there's four computers for four kids, or whatever, or that home isn't the hellhole, and the school isn't the I won't say the hellhole because there's love there, I'm sure, somewhere, in some cases, but the school is the whatever. It's the safe haven for the day. You can't just close that for 4 months and say, what's the problem? We're learning from home. Who's kidding who, Kevin?
Well, and I agree with you there. And I even, I even can say that, we have a really substantial number of students who live in poverty, who don't have access to internet, who, all of those things are factors as well. And we, we work really hard to try and mediate all those situations. And, I'm very proud that the college has done such a fine job of that. But I get what you're saying. It's not, we tend to get the motivated students. We'll get some that come out of high school and they're in college because they think they're supposed to be in college, and they aren't all that engaged, and they don't typically last very long. But almost all of our students are there because they want something better, and that, you're right, that is a substantial difference. I don't have to worry about that motivation part for the most part. Although we do have a lot of students where, we got to push them across the finish line because they are leading, way different lives than, what you and I are used to leading. And I once had somebody make a really pithy observation, and that is just talking about all the things you have to do to get funding, to get food, to get, all of those things when you are living below the poverty level. And she said, it's exhausting being poor. It's complicated being poor, and there's all kinds of complications that don't exist in most people's lives, and so they can't relate to it. And I think, that's one of the things that we've created now with all of the people that are hurting economically now. They're finding out just how complicated life can be. Being without, not getting a paycheck, trying to get by on a day in, day out basis, and that impact, I don't think, is getting enough attention at this point.
No, and what is the stress on something if you built your whole life and all of a sudden you see down the road, and plus the unevenness of the money. I mean, I can't even. It would be very hard for me. I see the CNBC, Chris. They, I don't know. I like the people that are on there. Somehow, they have the morals of God knows what, an alligator or something. I don't. they have the president of Costco on there telling them how good life is. Well, of course it is. You closed all your competition. Jesus Christ. I mean, what am I? That's, I'm saying, Kevin, we are at the point here where even in your case, where if you have a normal class of 30, if there's six or seven people that have access to none of this stuff, we know enough now to where those six or seven people can sit in the 8 feet apart in the back part of the room with the windows open. And, I mean, I saw pictures of during the TB era when people were so scared bleepless about TV, where they had children's classes outside in the cold when it was snowing. They didn't say stop school. They undertook them. I'm saying right now you could have, and I'm not you personally, but you as a group, you could have eight adults in one of those classes 10 feet apart right now with masks on if they had to be there and the rest of the people were home. Would be my guess. And if we had the idiots at the CDC didn't blow the test like they did, you could have somebody come in and random sample 10 people every night in your school to see if you were getting a problem. We could do this intelligently, and we're not.
Well, we're taking a different path on that, and I don't know how it's all going to shake out. I really don't. I don't know what the return to school is going to look like yet. You know, I know it's not going to be till the fall. It's not going to be during the summer term. So I don't know what to tell you. I don't know what to expect out of it. I think everybody's intentions are, at least, you know, in my micro world, I think the intentions are all good. They're all about safety. I don't know what we're accomplishing.
Kevin, I honestly don't think, and Maddie and I were sorry having this debate in a way in. I think people react in certain ways, all right? Even in their own mind. I mean, people who have money, in a lot of ways, not everybody, will always react in a way that you can predict their next move. People that are this way, you can react to their next move. To me, a lot of this making people stay at home without regard to what the home is like or who's there or how many people are there, to me it smacks of, just don't come near me. I don't care. Just sending people home, what's the difference between sending somebody to a school, but now the school is your responsibility, where if I send them all home, none of it's my responsibility. If 15 people die in a home where they got some big house where there's 15 old people living there, it's not my problem. But if those 15 people catching on the subway, it is my problem. But it's the same issue.
To me, I think that's part of what you're seeing with government too.
Yeah.
That you have people saying, you know, nope, it's the old thing like we talk about with TSA. Nobody wants to be first.
Right.
Nobody wants to be the one who's went out on a limb. Apparently, the governor in Georgia is willing to do that, but nobody wants to go out on a limb and say, I'll give this a try and be blamed for people dying. I think it's more blame than knowledge based. It would be different if you say, well, we're going to stay under lock and key because I know it's dangerous if we don't. It is more like, let's let somebody else figure it out so that I don't get blamed if things go bad.
Well, how do we stop
Lou's point yesterday? I thought was a good one, and I haven't heard you guys mention it yet. But the legal liability in all this, I think, is a much bigger factor than we're giving it credit.
Well,
if you run that nursing home, or if you run that store, or whatever, you don't want to be the one liable that gets the whole thing swept through and killed a bunch of people.
Well, I haven't heard you guys say that yet. But we don't know that you. You don't try and figure out where
Lou, he's a lawyer. He said that yesterday.
I know he
and
did.
You haven't mentioned that at all, and I'm saying I think that's a big factor.
I know that, and he's what I'm saying is he's suspecting that that's where we're headed, and because he's Lou, I'm sure he's
saying
right.
That if you run a nursing home or if you run a dozen nursing homes, you do not want a huge liability with that. You're keeping everyone out. And right or wrong, that's he's saying that's where they're coming from. It has nothing to do with...
Yeah, I mean, it's the same thing as... Essentially the same thing that I was just saying, is nobody wants the blame. So they're going to do... They're going to follow the herd, not the science. Look, in the statistics world, in the business stats world for quality management, there is a phenomenon called tampering. And what that is saying, I don't know the numbers, so, you know, how many times has a boss from some place come in into a department and said, you're below average today, why? Fix something. Well, how is it we get an average? Well, you add up all the observations, you divide by the number of observations, and you get a number. You have an average because sometimes you're better and sometimes you're worse. So it's really an understanding of your, you know, in quality management, it's an understanding of variance. It's an understanding of what the outliers are versus what the, you know, and something called special cause and as opposed to the normal random variation in your system. Okay, and I say all that just to say that if you just start reacting all the time to every below average observation instead of looking for special cause, you know, outside of your control limit types of situations and fixing those, then you're just going to make it worse. And I think we've seen a lot of the same thing, is that people didn't really have a grasp on the numbers and started reacting anyway, and whether it's unintended consequences or whether it's making certain, you know, the spread of the virus worse in nursing homes or whatever it is, that the reactions to that aren't based on good data are going to hurt you more often than they're ever going to help you. It would only be luck that would make it helpful.
And we could run, and I will never say Lou's wrong because he's obviously right on that, but I've never seen anything like in the world we now live in. Well, Andy Karabetsos can't come on, if Lakeside was still a sponsor, the new people at Lakeside would never let Andy come out because of legal liability. They don't want it. What in God's name was the legal liability that came on? Andy came on and gave everybody he gave us the mortgage rates. Where exactly would you find legal liability there, Manny? Yet what it comes down to is the new people in charge of that, they don't want to have any idea what Andy's doing. If he doesn't do anything, it's safer, and they won't let him do anything.
No doubt about it.
So,
like I said, right or wrong, I'm just saying
that's what they're going to tell you. But the legal liability with this guy's mom already has it is already there. Let him come visit her. Where's the liability there? If he wears a mask and gloves and stays 2 feet away from her,
199 other people in there.
But I'm saying it's already there. They let it in. There's the liability.
The way liability works, and I think Lou would agree with me on this, is that. In this case, we'd be talking negligence. It's not criminal,
right.
So we'd be talking that people were somehow negligent. So now it becomes, what's your definition of negligent? What would a reasonable person do? What is the proper precaution to take? Is the proper precaution to take, mask, gloves, et cetera? Or is the proper precaution, lock them out and don't let them in? Well, when half of the world has said, lock them out and don't let them in, the standard's been set, and therefore, and this is where Lou comes in and would say, now that has become the standard for what we do, if you don't follow to that standard, then you're going to set yourself up for a liability case.
I think you're exactly right.
Right, but this is the standard. I don't want people like Jay Pritzker and Lori Lightfoot setting a standard that the rest of us didn't decide on.
That may not be reasonable.
It may not be reasonable.
It may not be the right standard, and I think that's where I'd throw in on it is I don't know that that's the right standard. So, and Tom, I think you'd agree.
Yeah.
Whether it's what we agree on in general, or even what we can demonstrate via science or via statistics, it doesn't matter. I don't think that standard is necessarily supportable here.
But I think it ties right back
in. And I think Carl would tell you it absolutely is.
Yeah, I think that ties right back into the bank thing that Chief said, though. We don't know, like you said, if they're right or if they're wrong. We suspect that they might be wrong or maybe somewhere in the middle, but it's the safer move to protect them, and that's clearly why they're doing it.
Well, but you also don't nothing ventured, nothing gained, Matty. You're not going to.
I'm just trying to put myself in their shoes.
Well, but the shoes are. I don't want to be bothered.
The Georgia governor, if he's right, then he's going to look terrific. But it's much safer, right? The safer play, obviously, would be just to, like Kevin said, to do what everyone else is doing. Because if he's wrong, he is going to be eviscerated.
Well, let me help all these people if they're listening. Let me help them all. The day any one of these guys, Georgia, Michigan, you name it, Timbuktu, the day somebody lightens something up, okay, those numbers are going to bump up because we have had people locked up so long.
Of course they will.
That will bump up. Now, the question is, if they bump up one or two people, you're going to get three idiots that are going to say, there's one more death than yesterday. Look it, because you let things up. That's going to happen. We know that. But the point is, what is the goal here? The goal started out to be to lower the curve, I'll use the term curve, so that the hospitals don't get overwhelmed. Well, now they're not overwhelmed. Now if that's not it anymore, tell me what the new one is, don't you?
100% agree. Yep.
I mean, what's the new one? If it's we're going to stay home until 50% of the people have it, what they think now? 60% of the people in Sweden have already had it? Something like that?
No, they're hoping to get to that point because that's herd
immunity. But where are they? No, they're way up the train now, I thought.
Yeah, I think the report I read yesterday, they had to pull back because it was completely false. And so they had to withdraw it. And so they're coming up with a new report in Sweden.
But the point being is, where are we talking? What I'm saying is if that number is a year and we're all going to get it anyway, okay, and you got 90 bazillion people out of business, and you've got four big box stores and Amazon left. This is not a place anybody wants to live. I mean, is it? I don't, you know, who wants to live here? I'm not so sure I do. SP Futures up 21, NASDAQ Futures up 54. I'm Tom Howie, Mr. Matt Weber, Mr. Kevin O'Neill. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter, the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, Nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Well, don't play Stash and Jacks. I'm Tom Howe. It's Matt Weber, Mr. Kevin O'Neill. S&P futures up 1950. NASDAQ futures up 4850. Dow futures up like 150. Let's review yesterday just a little bit, because yesterday was one of those days. Dow was up 39. S&Ps were down a buck and a half. NASDAQ was down 60 cents. But that does not tell the tale. And you hear me talk once in a while about volatility, certainly the option world. And we talked to Chris yesterday. And he was saying that in his stock study world, they always use close to close. Well, yesterday was one of those days where the intraday volatility was wild. We were up pretty heavy. We were up like 60 spoo points. And the Gilead that had just came out last week with that article, matter of fact, we covered it here. I should mention this. University of Chicago said that this drug of theirs was really working on people. They had COVID to the point where, what, man, he had 16 people they gave it to. You know, they ran, well, the article said they were on ventilators, which was untrue, by the way. They weren't on ventilators. They said 15 of them walked out of the hospital 2 days later. So it was a huge plus. Market was up huge that day. Well, yesterday they came out and said, by the way, that the real study on this particular drug was a massive clunker and didn't work. So we went from up 60 points to down 20 in the NASDAQ at probably maybe a minute and a half, and then bounced back up to maybe up 50, and then we came down and closed like unchanged on the close. So it was a bizarre day during the day, but it ended up like nowheresville. All right, over in Europe, after a long story, DAX down 52.5%, FTSE down 28.5%. You know this, CAC around down 21.5%. Wow, right across the board, man. Nikkei down 167.8%. Shanghai down 30, that's a full percent. Hang Seng down 145, that's 0.6%. So the rest of the world's down, even though we really are not. Bonds, 0.60 is the 10-year rate. The Bund, minus 0.46. Japan sinking under zero again, minus 0.02. Oil, up another 57 cents to 1707. Now that is the June contract. And again, July is probably 21, and you spin it out a whole year, and it's over 30. Brent up 80 cents, 22.16. Natural gas, 181. RBOB gas, 64 cents. Gas is cheap, but you can't go anywhere. There's always another side to the story, isn't there, man? Gold up 13 bucks, 17.58. Silver up 11 cents, 15.47. What do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
38 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We have foggy conditions out there, so give yourself a little bit of extra time. With the light traffic volume, still some slower travel times because of the dense fog. We also have a crash on the inbound Stevenson right at Ashland Avenue, not too far out of downtown. Report of a pole down as well, so a car into a pole, and that pole went down. on the Stevenson. So not sure what happened there, but that's not good, and that's a bad start on I-55. No issues coming in on the Ryan, I-57 or the Bishop Ford. Eisenhower looks good. Kennedy traffic building due to the fog. Some slower travel times on the Edens and Kennedy, but no accidents or issues to report. Everything else looking good out there. Weather today, lots of clouds and fog early, and then we could have some rain in the forecast as well. Just a miserable day. The weather's been absolutely miserable. I say this every spring, but I hate spring. Rainy and 46 for the high today, with wind chills in the upper 30s downtown. Right now it is foggy and 37, going up to a terrific high of 46. For our Phoenix,
Manny, you went to the Forest Reserve. Go fishing, go walking. They won't even arrest you out there. There's not as many Gladys Kravitzes looking out the window at you.
That's probably true. Sunny with a high of 99 today in Phoenix. Right now it's clear and 70. In sports, of course, the NFL draft first round was last night. And the Cincinnati Bengals surprised no one and took Joe Burrow, the star quarterback out of LSU, with the number one overall pick. Chase Young went number two to the Redskins. The Cardinals took inside linebacker Isaiah Simmons with the number eight pick. Bears did not have a first-round pick. They, of course, traded it to the Raiders for Khalil Mack. But the Bears have two picks tonight in the second round, number 43 and number 50. And lastly, Chief, on this day in sports history, April 24th, 1901, you were just a young guy,
yeah,
in 1901.
Toddler.
The very first American League game was played on this date in 1901. Can you guess either of the two teams? I'll let Kevin throw a guess out there, too.
First American League game?
On this date in 1901.
I bet Baltimore was one.
They were not.
Well, I have no idea then.
Well, it had to be a New York team, so we'll go whatever the predecessor to the Yankees was.
I would have guessed a New York team, too, but it turns out it was a Chicago-Cleveland game.
Really?
It was the Chicago White Stockings versus the Cleveland Blues, and that was the first American League game on this date in 1901.
Well, that's why the National League is referred to as the Senior League, correct?
The Senior Circuit.
Yeah, Senior Circuit.
Yep.
That's wild. Hey, just so you know here, not that I want to say anything, because when we talk about things having lead time, like money supply moves and Keynesian moves and things, Germans, who've opened up their stores, okay, like 2 days ago, guess what? Nobody showed up. Germany allowed certain shops to reopen on Monday at an easing of lockdown measures. However, the CEO of the German Retail Federation warned consumer activity would be subdued for some time. So if we decide we want things somewhat normal by Labor Day, we better loosen up by 4th of July, because we've got people sufficiently afraid that we could open things up today and nothing would change, I don't think. Very little.
But at least the choice would be back in the hands of the people where it should be.
Right, but I'm saying we in order to do what we've done, we've got people pretty afraid. Correct? There's going to be people 5 years from now bitching that you're 5 feet away from them. Just saying.
Yeah, there's going to be, and that's the way it goes.
Yeah.
Did we overscare people? Probably, but nevertheless, that's the way it's going to be. It may, maybe we'll forget faster. We've always had a short attention span in this country anyway, or
that's true.
Not always, but over in the recent decades, we've had a very short attention span. So we tend to move from crisis to crisis and forget about the last one. Remember, a lot of people didn't fly after the 9/11 attacks, and by 2005 or 6, everybody was flying.
Well, nobody wanted to be in an office downtown for a little while if the Sears Tower, or whatever the hell they call it now, could fall and land on you, right?
Yeah, so I don't know what that curve's going to look like, but it's going to, it's going to take some time. I think the revelations about outdoors being better and so on, that the stuff that's starting to come out in those studies would suggest that good policy would be to figure out more ways for places like restaurants and taverns and so on to operate outside. Because those, that capability is coming. I think the ones that have outdoor gardens and things like that are, have a huge advantage, and they ought to be able to take advantage of that. I think there's some pathways here to getting us back on track.
Well, I sure hope so. I also want, but I want here's what always be beneath my concern here is not just, I'm starting to get the feeling, God, I hope I'm wrong, that this is just going to be a common cold. It's not leaving us. It's going to be 10 times worse. And I hope someday we're going to get a vaccine for it. The rich people that come on TV and say we should keep everybody in our house until we get a vaccine, we could be a century from now. I mean, I hope not, but we could be. We don't have a vaccine for the cold.
It could be never.
It could be never. Although I've seen the amount of people on it, Kevin, and how good they are at these kinds of things these days, I don't think it'll be never. I really don't think so. Now, whether the vaccine will be, even if it prepares you to the point where you shake it off and don't die from it, that'd be fine. It might get you prepared to where the symptoms are less and that the hospitalizations are less and that it doesn't, you know, knock off half the old people. If it gets to that point, I guess we can deal with it. I mean, we're still talking about a disease where 80% of the people don't even know they have it, or 60 or some number, which is really bizarre. But the fact is, it affects a real lot of people in a lot of bad ways. And the more everybody thinks they have no respect for this disease, that nothing can be further from the truth. Because as much as I read about what the jailing is doing to people, I read about what the disease is doing to some people, and some of the stuff is not fun. Blood clots, all kinds of stuff that the cold doesn't do, the flu doesn't do, those kinds of things. But also, part of my issue...
Well, to quote a friend of ours, hope you don't get this thing is a mofo.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And, but now, not to be fair, but he's a lifelong smoker. Maybe not anymore, I haven't seen him in a while, but, I mean, he's on a co-opted list. He's not a 10, but he's clearly not, you know, Mr. Health either, right? I mean, none of us are. Am I right? I mean, it's...
Well, I'm Mr. Health.
Yes.
That's the other name people call me.
Yes, Mr. As you go down the street, you constantly hope people, where's the beach? That way, as you show them your bicep, you know, type of thing.
Yeah. Walk down the street over and go, hey, Mr. Health!
Here's the lake, is that way. But I also don't want the market to figure out how bad society's doing, because I don't think it has, and I hope it never does, because... I mean, the market, people are bouncing along like this is just another down move in the market, like long-term capital or like the Argentinian debt. No, it's not. You shut your own country down, for God's sake. I mean, how many bankrupts are we? I can't figure out what the government's doing here, Kevin. I don't understand where they expect the buck to end. I mean, Truman had the thing on his desk, the buck stops here. Okay, you own Kevin's Tavern. You say, all right, I don't have any people here. I can't pay my rent. All right, so you tell your guy, screw you, I can't pay the rent. Well, I'll try and make it back to you, but whatever, I can't pay it. So that guy says, all right, well, then I got a mortgage. Maybe he doesn't. Maybe if somebody just has the equity and they take the hit, then it gets kind of absorbed someplace. But even then, that guy would spend your rent on something that he's not going to spend it on. That's what I keep saying. The economy is an orgasm. Or not an orgasm, an organism. Yeah.
No, it isn't.
No, it isn't. Not now. No, it isn't. Not now. An organism. And the whole thing has to be working. Okay, he doesn't get his rent. Now, the other guy, if he doesn't have a mortgage, he absorbs it. Now, he's probably not going to buy something or whatever. If he does have a mortgage, maybe he's paying it, in which case it's coming out of, it's a deficit deal on his part. Or if he doesn't, he says to the bank, screw you, which I think is going to happen a real lot. Okay? Now, the banks are sitting there going, then we had the guy I don't really like very much from the Richmond Fed. We just make sure we keep our banks solvent. So just, there's the Fed's one playbook. Just keep pouring money in the banks no matter what happens. As long as the society we could be fighting in the street with clubs like a bunch of cavemen. As long as the banks have money, everything's okay. I mean, what the hell? The Fed's printing money to save some people. But where does the buck stop for every man? I don't know, Kevin. Is it going to be so uneven? Obviously the buck has stopped somewhere, if you and I own a blue jean store, but for Walmart, it's fine. Here in Illinois, anyway. You said in Michigan it isn't. They're selling blue jeans, you know, out the behind. I mean, if people want one, you go get one. You want a sofa, you go to Costco. Can't go to the furniture store.
No, I'm going to have to go over to the Walmart in Michigan, because I always do all my shopping in Indiana. I'm going to need to go over and see what this is like. I'll snap some pictures and get them out to you. Because, I don't know what would fall under essential and non-essential.
The entire Myers store, Kevin,
from a clothing standpoint, shirts are essential. Pants are not, because the camera only looks at the, you know, for those of us that meet a lot online, the camera doesn't look at the below the waist. So I can wear gym shorts as long as I have a decent, you know, a professional-looking shirt. I'm good.
You see, you're not one of the knuckleheads that wears the full suit with the shorts underneath, are you? The full
Very typical of on-air sports people.
Yeah.
I like that look. You got the basketball shorts, the tennis shoes, and then, like, the sport coat and shirt and tie.
But here, I mean, you go to the Myers on Sunday morning, you buy whatever you want. Outdoor stuff, I mean, you know, whatever you want. I mean, actually, you know what? They've cut back on a lot of the plant stuff. The plant stores are closed. Plants aren't considered essential.
Which, you know, to me is crazy because how many people in the world relax by gardening? You know, how many people do you know that just love to get out and do gardening? I know quite a few, and so if you're going to lock us up and start taking away leisure activities that, you know, that may be productive, yes, we, you know, everybody wants their lawn to look good, I don't care, but everybody wants the yard to look good, that's one thing, but that would be, you know, not all that essential. But what if, you know, 4 hours out in the yard planting the planting flowers and getting the hedgerows and all that kind of stuff and making it look beautiful? What if that's somebody's leisure time?
Well,
and we're going to kill that too,
Kevin. I think most of what we all agree on the show, even Mr. Weber, is that we need people in office, in business, wherever they are, that ask the second question. We'll say, okay, we only want, you know, the stores that are important for things to be open. We got to have, you know, some carry-out food. Well, we don't really care about the people in the kitchen there being 6 feet apart. Ah, screw them. You know, I don't know anybody like that, so normally my family, we'll screw them. Well, we want Amazon open. Yeah, but the people working in the warehouse, they're not necessarily, screw them. But now,
actually, they are in Amazon. They're doing electronic monitoring, and little alarms go off when they get too close to each other.
Well, if they do it, there was not. I get what I'm saying is, I'm not putting a hit on Amazon. What I'm saying, I'm sure it wasn't part of the state discussion when they allowed them to stay open, is what I'm saying. So when somebody says, "Well, we got to let Walmart stay open when they got food," why doesn't somebody say, "Yeah, but Governor, 80% of the store is not food, and the other people who compete with them, you just closed." Oh, well, screw those other people. I mean, do they even have the conversation, I guess, is my question. We've got all of them getting paid when other people aren't, Kevin. So do we even have that conversation? So why exactly does anybody think that people are closer together in a Lane Bryant than they are in a Walmart? You know, why shouldn't Lane Bryant be open, for God's sake? How easy is it to be 6 feet apart in Lane Bryant or Macy's or someplace or a furniture store? Pretty damn easy. The couple times Daughtry's dragged me to a furniture store, I haven't been within 10 feet of anybody. I didn't want to be in there. I mean, it's a lot easier to distance there than it is at the Myers. I mean, what are we...
Except if you go in a furniture store, it's really hard to distance from the salespeople because they just depend on you.
Well, that's true. They must know that I have no intention to buy anything. They always leave me alone, but... What I'm saying, I mean, is there any thought behind this is my question. And when government starts making, and every time I see something like this happen, I see, God, there's a business. Maybe it's owned by a guy like Kevin or Matt. Now, that guy's out of business. Why? I mean, but here's another guy crowing on TV about how well things are going at a Costco. Well, why? This guy sells furniture and that guy sells furniture. We got to stop doing this as fast as we can. Because it's going way beyond the disease. We're picking winners and losers all over the place.
Have you ever ordered anything online from Walmart?
Actually, yeah. I got there and I didn't have it.
Oh, you got there and they have this delivery tower where you know, if you go with your smartphone, you hold up the barcode to it, and next thing you know, 20 seconds later, your product, whatever it is you ordered, is pops out and you know, comes down the conveyor belt, pops out, and the door opens, and you take it. And the reason I say that is this is another example. Is one of the pizza places is doing it, one of the big chains. I don't remember which one. I don't know if it's Domino's or Papa John's or, you know, whatever. But one of them is now has those kind of kiosks. They've managed to scramble and get that. They've probably been experimenting you order online, pay online, walk in, you pick up your pizza out of that, and it's no, you don't touch it, you don't talk to anybody. Now, you know, so that's, they get advantage too by all of this, because, you know, Bruno's Pizza, on the other hand, can't do that. They can't afford that kind of investment. Right. It's a local, you know, it's small, and they can't do the same thing. In their case, they are saying in their online ordering, what kind of car do you have? We'll bring it out to you.
Well, yeah, and I mentioned this the other day. I drove by the Chipotle down on Homer Glen, and there's a line from here to God knows where for people doing carry out. And down the block is the Pepe's that is doing the carry out. There isn't a car there because you actually have to get out and walk in and pick it up. Well, nobody wants to do that. I mean, we have people, quote, that afraid. Now, maybe they should be doing, you know, they'll bring it out to your car sort of thing. But even that, the person's walking out. I mean, do they think people aren't handling your stuff in the Chipotle? I mean, are we that dumb? I mean, I don't know. I'm just, but the what I'm saying is, when we start doing these other things and making these decisions, these winners and losers are going to be around for a while. And it's a major change. And I think what Maddie was mentioning this morning is he has a lot of people with a different age group. They're a lot of my friends, although I have friends his age, obviously, him. Maddie, maybe you should actually tell people how many people that were, quote, stay at home working by the week now are getting actually furloughed.
Oh, there's many. Yeah, absolutely. It's affecting everybody. I think we all know that.
Yeah.
When you're talking about between 4 and 6 million people getting laid off and filing for unemployment every week, and that's not even counting the people who had an hours reduction or who are not qualifying for commissions or bonuses now because no one's buying anything, and so they're seeing a substantial, you know, cut in their pay that they're used to. It's affecting everybody. I mean, that's why, you know, from my perspective, I think that there's a, you know, I said this yesterday, there's a very reasonable conversation to be had in the middle where you can be safe and cautious because 50,000 people in the U.S. have died during a shutdown. So obviously it is going to get worse when you open back up, at least for a little while. But you also can't have everyone unemployed at the same time. So why can't you have both conversations and say, you know, okay, if you're able to work from home, let's continue to have you work from home at least for the next 30 days or 60 days. But if you're not, let's start reopening places on this date, and let's do it cautiously. You know, let's wear masks in the store for 30 days or 60 days and see how that works. I don't understand why we can't have a reasonable conversation in the middle where we can be cautious and safe, but also start to reopen and get people back to work.
Okay,
I haven't heard that. It's always been extreme on one side.
Governors can't look at their states and say part of the state is ready to reopen and another part of the state might not be. So, you know, I've been tracking very closely with the state of Michigan's numbers, which, by the way, for in specific days change almost daily. So,
yeah.
You know, yesterday's numbers aren't the same today as they were yesterday, and last week's numbers aren't the same today.
It's called a revision. Revision, God. It's a revision.
Well, I don't know why they do it that way, but, you know, there may be an explanation for it, but I don't know what it is. I don't know if they want to, you know, rig the game. They generally come out higher, but sometimes they come out a little lower, too, so I think it's just fine-tuning their reports. Anyway, I digress. The point is that if you can see, if you just look at a graph of it, that Detroit peaked 2 weeks ago, the Detroit area, but it's still way higher than the rest of the state. The rest of the state is flat and low numbers. Why on earth would we not want to start doing something in the rest of the state? It looks like in Michigan that we are waiting until everybody is all better. Whatever that means.
Whatever that means,
until everybody is all better.
Yeah, whatever that means.
If I guess I would have to be king of Michigan because the governor job is taken. So if I were king of Michigan, I would be saying, well, let's start seeing what the policy is going to be for the whole state by taking the parts that are ready now and seeing what works and what doesn't.
Kevin, answer me this, though.
That's way too common sense.
Yeah, but let me answer me this.
I know, and government just can't handle that kind of thing.
I'll ask you this other question next week, but now we have Maddie on his horse over there. Maddie, why is it such, I mean, these guys are on CNBC, they're making a lot of money, we're not, basically, on Stocks and Jacks. My solution to the United situation, they've run this United thing now with this Chameth guy and these other people. This discussion's gone on now for, it has to be 15 hours. about should you let these places go bankrupt or should you bail them out. Why isn't, like Kevin said, the common sense answer, this board did a horse bleep job. They bought every nickel they had, they bought stock back with. So us as a government, instead of doing the $20 billion bailout, which probably is legitimate because nobody thought this was ever going to happen, it has to be 50 because they did a horse bleep job. I want those people out of it. Why can't anybody say that instead of all or none? And yet this thing will be running this bail them out or don't bail them out, one or the other, she loves me not, for months now. And yet that's not the answer.
Yeah, I don't know if it's like just the political divide or what, but everything is either crazy on one side or crazy on the other. And there are very like commonsensical pathways to getting back open in the middle, and I haven't heard any of that.
No. Why? I mean, why? Do people not want to hear it? Do the advisors, either on one side or the other, is it if you don't give them everybody enough fear, they're not
going to stay
home? I really
thought Pritzker might actually be a guy that would do it just because he is a, you know, big business guy, but is also a Democrat, and I thought maybe he would be somewhere in the middle where he would say, okay, you know, we need to get people back to work, but let's be intelligent about it. Illinois is a perfect example, like Michigan, where there are counties where there's barely any cases. Let's get them reopened first. Chicago is obviously probably going to be last, but, you know, some of the suburbs we could probably start to reopen. I mean, and we're not hearing any of that. It's just, no. We're shut down another 30 days. We'll talk to you then. It's like, what?
Well, real quick question for Kevin. And so Maddie, if you got a ball bearing manufacturer outside of your town and you don't have one case, you start the thing back up. What good is it doing? Who's going to buy it? If it's the only, I mean, it's just one cog. It's like getting somebody's bicep working when the body's still dead.
No, that's true in some cases in industries, you know, that rely upon each other. But in some communities, opening up the bar and the restaurant is probably a good idea.
Oh, I totally agree. But I mean, the world can't just be the gas station. Well, of course, the gas station in Indiana, they sell chicken, right? They sell everything. They sell everything. Anyway. Kevin, we gotta let you go, buddy. We got another guest coming in a minute. SP Futures not only up 16, NASDAQ Futures up 36. Talk at you next week. Have a nice weekend. And don't give this disease to your cat if you had one. A couple cats have it now, I hear.
Don't have a cat.
Okay, well, you're good to go. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. Do you know when the unofficial start of real estate season is in the Chicago area? It's actually right after the Super Bowl. Yep, it's the time when the guys will finally get off the couch and the families start looking for homes in the area. Now, interest rates also have been hovering around 4%, and the selection of properties are great. And if you're a first-time home buyer, there is an Illinois program that allows you to purchase a home for only 1% down. And that also applies to anyone who hasn't owned a home in the past 3 years. So if you're thinking about it, this is the perfect time. Call or email me, and I will send you a free list of homes designed to your specifications in your area. My phone number is 708-349-3456, or you can email me, AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com. That's AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Holly, just Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures up 14 and a quarter, and NASDAQ futures up 31. Individual stocks in the Dow. We had Intel's earnings last night. They're down 299. They were down more than 3, so they clunked a little bit on the earnings. Everybody else is pretty much up here, at least a little bit. We got Caterpillar up 69 cents, Apple up 49 cents. The only one up over American Express's earnings were last night as well, I believe. They're up $1.54. We have Dan Janitas with us from Credis Capital LLC. He's been in the business forever, doing a lot of different stuff, and I was reading in his resume that he was 2 years at a distressed place, and boy, the demand for distressed people now has got to be something. Dan, welcome. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for having me. And yes, it is a great opportunity in distress right now. We haven't seen this kind of opportunity in more than a decade, so there's a lot of great opportunities out there.
I noticed you were on, you've been on all of the various shows. I have to ask you, you've been around a while. Were you ever on the Chicago thing, where Chicago had their own business show all day? Were you ever an accent expert?
I don't recall. I don't believe I was.
Was it Chuck Taylor and all those guys around all day long on Channel 26? Remember those guys?
Yes, I know who they are, but I don't believe that I was on that show.
They used to do a thing on the CBOE floor, so we were all on there. Back when the camera was about a million miles away, they'd spot you in the middle of some pit. It was really weird. So, have you ever seen anything quite like this? And anywhere? I mean, we've had a few good glitches.
No, I mean, we've lived through, I lived through 87 and the late 80s, and, there was, a lot of uncertainty in the market then, after the SNL crisis, and then again, lived in the late 90s, through long-term capital and the internet boom, and I'm not sure it's quite the same, this seems more severe than that period, but then again, through 2008, which was another period where we, the markets got decimated based on subprime mortgage loans. So it seems like it's once a decade that we go through something like this, and it catches us in a different way each time, and it catches us off guard. And this time is different, but I think history tells us that we can learn from this. And when prices are down, it doesn't necessarily mean it's time to sell. It doesn't mean we have to run for the just to get out of here, because we shouldn't be selling everything in this environment. The one thing that is probably different about this environment is that, and I think it has more to do with the fact that our world is moving faster and faster and faster, and this decline in our markets happened precipitously. The price of oil dropped about 6 weeks ago. On one day, it dropped 31% in a matter of seconds. And this, I think, because we've seen such a rapid drop, we're in an environment where, as things start improving, it's likely that we may see, people are talking about a V or a U, But we may see at some point a recovery that is more rapid as well. So yeah, this has been a very interesting period.
Yeah, two things, I want you to talk me up from these, because you obviously have a little more optimistic view of things than me, and I've got to help you right. had some dude on Bloomberg the other day, and of course I should remember his name, but my brother was, we watched Bloomberg in one room and we watched the other stuff in the other room. And he said, the guy comes on and he says, the market's down 15% and the society's down 40%. One of them's wrong. I mean, what do you make of that?
Yeah, there is a disconnect. There's no question. The stock market, I think, has always been overly optimistic. I mean, the investors in the market have been overly optimistic. There's algos and other computer-driven models that have driven our market, and we've seen that in the volatility, the extreme volatility that we've had. One day the news is all good and the algos are running up, and I think the market has probably run up much higher than it should. And then on other days, when the news is all bad, it can run down further than it should. In terms of what's going on in Main Street and the fact that a lot of small businesses are still struggling or will continue to struggle, the disconnect, there is a huge disconnect there. And I think we're going to see, these two come together in time. So I don't know whether it's going to be a month or a couple months or maybe even sooner that we see a merging or a reversion to the mean. So we will see over time, I think, a connection between these two. The one thing I will say is this market has been very fragmented. So, for example, you hear people saying, well, you know, tech is going to be good or biotech is going to be good, and food names, P&G, Campbell Soup, names like that will do well. And then they're saying, you know, on the other side, oil is not going to do so great. So oil, we already have 50 bankruptcies in the oil sector, more likely to come. The one thing I'll say about that is our world is much more integrated today than it was 10 years ago, than it was 20 years ago, than it was 30 years ago. So you can't have one sector like oil collapse and have everything else do great. Likewise, you can't have the stock market be trading the way it is when Main Street is suffering a lot more. So there will be a convergence, if you will, and I think we're likely to see that over the next month or so.
And what do you make of, to me, I mean, I try and read history as much as I can, but to me, the actions of the Fed, I mean, was it 2 weeks ago? The same second that guys like you and me were talking to clients about how bad the unemployment numbers were going to be. God, is there a number that you never paid any attention to? It was a Thursday's number, and that was the number of the week. Like, I think I've paid attention to that thing for 30 years. Who cared if it was 285 or 290 or whatever? But now that it's 5 million, it's a big number. Have you ever seen anything like them push out that really horrible number, and before you even got a chance to swallow, the Fed put out, don't worry, we got $2.3 trillion coming at you. And then virtually in the same minute.
No, I have not seen that. I guess we saw a little bit of it with the bank bailout back in 08, 09, that period. And there was some of that with the SNL bailout, but not to this extreme and not with this rapidity, not with this, it didn't happen this quickly back then. So, yeah, that was very surprising. And I think it's going to take the markets a while for this to digest. So to go back to your previous question, where there's this disconnect between Main Street and Wall Street. Main Street hasn't yet seen this money. Parts of Main Street have, but a lot of Main Street hasn't. So with the new stimulus package that we just got yesterday, we'll start, you know, we have to see how this plays itself out. It seems to be taking a longer time to get to the small companies and to the small businesses. But there's the flood of money into the system. It has to be done, I guess, as it would have to be done in a period of war, and the market just hasn't had time to absorb it yet.
What a couple of questions. How much more can they pour in before we become the Weimar Republic?
Yeah. Well, the fact that the first $350 billion that was going to small businesses ran out so quickly was concerning to me, and I know to most other small business owners, that how many more people are out there still waiting. I don't know if I ever heard a number. So it could be. Now, I'm not sure we're going to see inflation as some people feared, because inflation, our economy was already pretty strong before we went into this, and there's no, I don't have any major concerns about inflation, but I do have concerns that we're going to have to build our way back, and this is probably going to take a number of years.
What, two things I want to run by you. Plus, by the way, we got to come back, you got to have you back just to talk about inflation, because you and I can have a nice fight about that, but not today. Not today.
Okay. Sure.
The, the two things. One is, the other stuff you've mentioned, by the way, I survived physically in 87 too, and all these other things. I was not around really other than I was still, I guess I had a regular job for the savings and loan crisis, which I try and research as much I can because that was interesting one too. It was kind of before our time in the business. It seems to me that the all the stuff the Fed and the Congress is doing, even if they don't even know it themselves, they have, it looks to me like they've got a 45, possibly 60 day time horizon. And then the money they're putting out is kind of, to me, is zeroing towards that number. I mean, obviously, you got a loan, you're paying, you can pay people to the end of June, correct? And it gets forgiven.
Right.
It seems to me that if we're still in this boat in August, we got a real problem. And the other thing is, it's kind of a two-part question. All the other things you mentioned that I've mentioned from time to time and other people, once we got out of it, I mean, once the money markets didn't crash in 2008, once we poured money in, we saved this market, saved that market, it seems, Dan, that every day, every hour, things got slightly better. That the direction was clearly there. Yet today, this thing to me, every single day when people aren't working, more and more people are getting furloughed by the day. Look out the window and there's one-tenth the cars out there. The oil buildup didn't stop yesterday, even if the market went down. It's still building up. We're still using, you know, 60, you know these numbers better than me, 60 million barrels a day, and we're producing 100. Every minute, we're still going deeper in the hole here. This seems new to me. That didn't even happen after 87. Once Tuesday morning passed, we kind of went up, right? I mean, that's what has me so afraid about this. Should I be?
What's different this time when we're talking about oil is that there's another element behind this that's been sort of in the background for months. And I've been pounding the table about this when about 6 weeks ago we got the news that oil prices had dropped by 31% in a matter of seconds. And that's when the first thought that went in my head is we're going to see some bankruptcies in some of the highly leveraged energy names. This was severe. And the reason it's severe is the how quickly this happened. The fact that it could happen this quickly, and it had, and then it continued to, and then oil prices went into negative territory. What was happening, in addition to the slowdown in global demand, was this price war, and the price war is extremely significant. The Saudis and the Russians had been in this battle. They were flooding the U.S. markets, trying to make the U.S. oil market less competitive, and all of that added up, and it was like a snowball effect that just decimated the price of oil, and was maybe trying to decimate the industry as a whole. So this is new territory from the point of view that we have multiple factors, not just your traditional supply and demand factor in play here, but we have a, quote, price war, if you will, going on at the same time. Now, some of that's been lifted. There's been some negotiations, but we're still dealing with the ramifications of that, with having tankers off the coast of California and tankers coming they're off the coast of Africa. They're heading this way with lower-priced oil and no place to put it. So that situation is unique. I do think we will get through this as we see people get back to work. I think we're going to get through this as we see continued production cuts. So this will happen over time. This is where you have to look out long-term as an investor. And in the short run, it's going to continue to be ugly. But if you can look out beyond the June and July contracts, and you can think about the fact that we still need oil, as much as I would love to see us turn, you know, into use alternative energy sources, we're not there yet. It's cost prohibitive. we still need to be driving cars, flying planes, you know, heating houses. So that's going to, as we start getting back and the economy starts getting back and airplanes are flying, the price will come back, the price of oil will come back into a more normalized range. And at that point, you got to look at which companies are going to survive that and where you want to make your investments. You want to make your investments today so you can have that upside, but it's going to take a little while.
What if the price war, as foolish as that was, if that didn't happen, I almost get the feeling, but I'm trying to learn here from you. I would have said that cost us 2 weeks. That the demand destruction is clearly the boogeyman here, not so much the price war.
Well, I think it cost us more than 2 weeks.
More than that? Okay. I'm asking. I just lobbed that one out there.
Yeah.
But I mean, if there was no price war, if what we see out the window continues with nobody on planes and stuff for another 2 months, I think we would have got to the same spot. I mean, close.
We would have eventually gotten to the same spot. It was just accelerated by this price war. It's accelerated by the dumping that took place or is still taking place by lower-priced oil in the U.S. There will be a demand that will pick up, and I do agree with you that if it had not, if the price war had not happened, I just think it would have been maybe a few months, maybe a few more months before we got to that point.
Dan,
and we might have been closer to the turnaround already, and at least the gradual turnaround and people getting back to work.
Dan, how jammed up is the physical system? Is it the Illinois equivalent of a guy driving his corn truck into Marseille and they say no more room, get out of here? I mean, is every pipeline full? Is
pretty
every
close?
Is it that bad?
At the moment, it's pretty close. Honestly, there are tankers out there. There's, you know, the short period of scramble to try to put the oil someplace because there's a cost of keeping it on the tankers. There's a cost of keeping it in the trucks or on the tanker ships. From what I'm reading and what I'm hearing, it's manageable. And I think a lot of attention has been finally focused on this issue, and I don't believe it's going to be a long-term problem. So I think it gets resolved in a matter of weeks, maybe a month, that we get to a point where we're not talking oversupply still. We're talking low prices, but we're not talking oversupply.
Well, right now, can a guy in Western Canada even get his stuff in the pipeline?
There's still some activity. You know, I talked to the CEOs and CFOs of several energy companies. I had a couple of conversations this week. You know, they're still pumping oil. A lot of the numbers that are coming out from the analysts are showing like rig counts for some of the rig companies that we own are much lower. There was one analyst that was saying that there's only 50, you know, they're only operating 50 rigs, and the company said, for sure, we're operating 72. So there's more activity that's still going on, and I think because of this rapidly changing environment, some numbers and some actual facts are getting lost through the cracks. So there is we're not like in a total halt period. We haven't gone to zero in terms of production right now, but we've come down significantly, and I think we're at that, if you want to say calling it at the bottom, we're pretty close to that bottom right now.
Hey, we have a listener has a question. We'll do the listener first, and then I have a question about the settlement the other day, which probably take us a little bit, because that was serious stuff. Matty, what listener wanted what? Was
yeah,
that?
Yeah, Michael writes in, a great conversation, guys. Can you ask Dan about the credit markets for oil?
Sure. So the credit markets, that's my area of expertise. I would say it from the point of view, if you're somebody who's interested in making an investment, there's some great opportunities in the credit markets. We have, we own some of the short-term bonds of some of the companies we believe are going to be survivors. And you're able to get close to, as an investor, you're able to get more than 20% for some bonds that will be maturing in September. We do our homework on all the companies that we own. We talk to senior management. Our analysts do extensive research. I've spent a lot of time in Houston meeting with the companies. our belief is that if you choose, if you're in the right place, you have a lot more money to make, a lot more recovery with being in the bonds rather than being in the stock. So the companies have a liquidation value. Many of these companies own assets. If it is the worst case scenario for some of these companies where you have assets for sale, maybe they will be sold at distressed prices, but there's definitely opportunity. So how do you play that? I would say that, you know, a couple of the rig companies are, Nabors Industries is the largest, has the largest fleet, the largest drilling fleet in the world. They have some, they also have some offshore platforms. There's two ways to play Nabors. One would be in the, they have short-term bonds. They're 5% coupon due, September 15th of this year, yielding 22%. Money good bonds, very high likelihood they're going to be paid in September, extremely high likelihood. And they also have a preferred stock if you want to take a little more risk. That's trading at about $2.30. That's $2.30. And it's not just any old preferred stock. It pays 6%, and it matures on May 1st of 2021.
Is that cumulative, though, so, Dan?
I'm sorry?
Is that cumulative? They miss a payment, they got to make it up to you, or no? And
they prefer... If they don't... what a company generally does is restructures before that happens.
Okay.
This particular company is unlikely to miss any interest payments between now and the time that those bonds mature, and very unlikely to miss any interest payments over the next year in this worst-case scenario because they have tremendous liquidity. This is a company that I have a lot of faith in because they have already done a restructuring prior to the virus hitting. They restructured some of their debt, and they're bondholder friendly, and they have a reputation for restructuring debt, making sure that they're keeping their debt, managing their debt, and I have a lot of confidence that we're going to see full recovery on the short term bonds. Maybe not full recovery on the preferred stock, but when you can buy it at two, and it's a mandatory preferred that pays 6%, there's quite a bit of upside here. That's one that you might want to look at as a longer term position, but the short term bonds are great. And one other idea on the natural gas side, a company called Southwestern Energy. Again, they're one of the largest natural gas companies there. Wells are predominantly in Appalachia, Pennsylvania, West Virginia. They have some bonds with the 4/10s due March of 2022, currently yielding more than 12%. And this is about, you have about a year and a half or a little less than 2 years to go on these bonds till maturity. But that's a pretty fat yield for a company that's money good, bonds that are money good. So there's some great opportunities. I would say stay away from the oil service companies on the credit side. I will say that a lot of the restructurings are going to take place outside of Chapter 11 for the bigger name energy companies. I don't think our administration wants to see a slew of well-known energy companies file Chapter 11 this year.
When you start, hopefully it wouldn't happen, one of these places you mentioned, but when you start actually getting into the bankruptcy procedure, and you start figuring out who gets what, and the common stock guys are usually bleep out of luck, and then the preferred, and maybe that's a tough one to be in. I mean, isn't it? I mean, it's not a spot you want to be.
I consider myself somewhat of an expert in that area because I when I was at Luma Sales, I was a bond portfolio manager, fixed income portfolio manager, but I also was the firm's bankruptcy expert representing Loomis.
Wow.
For some of the large positions that were owned back in the early 90s, and I was the chairman of several creditors committees, went through the process, and what I can say is that if you have time, if a bond was trading at 20-25 and then a year and a half later you're going to get par, I would wait. The same thing happened with Puerto Rico. I had one client that insisted on us investing in Puerto Rico when we had a small position, and all of a sudden it kind of just sat in her account, And then I get this phone call from her within a year saying, wait a minute, now I suddenly have $10,000. It was a $10,000 par value. So that can happen. I mean, that can happen. That does happen. You're a senior in the capital structure. You're going to get paid off before anyone else.
Do you always end up with a seat at the table, or does that somehow depend on the judge or whatever?
Well, the great thing about my background is I talk directly to management. So we have frequent conversations about this and how to restructure. But I will say, at least with the two names I mentioned, Nabors Industries and Southwestern Energy, these companies are not anywhere near, nor is there any plans to even talk about Chapter 11.
Okay.
What these companies do is they do a restructuring. They start buying back their debt outside of the restructuring. So in this period, they're going to be taking care of the bondholders and their interest payments as long as they can.
Oh, great. Hey, we only have 30 seconds. How about giving us a shameless plug for yourself? And we have to invite you back because we got to talk about the settlement the other day, and I got to fight you about inflation.
Sure, absolutely. Always happy to.
Where can we find you,
Dan? Where can
we
find you? Where can somebody find you?
We're breaking up.
All right.
No, that's all right. Where can people find you if they want to reach out to you at Kratos Capital?
Right, so KratosCapital.com, my email, djohnedis, DJOHNEDIS, at Kratos, CRATUS, capital.com.
Dan, take care. Thank you. It was very enjoyable, very educational. Got to have you back, but SP Futures up 20 now, and NASDAQ Futures up 44. Come back, we'll have Mr. John Flanagan.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Well, don't pay Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Miley, Mr. Man Weber. S&P futures up 22, NASDAQ futures up 54, Dow futures up 158. So individual stocks in the Dow that are up, American Express had earnings up 161. Intel, however, they had earnings are down 291. We've got Microsoft up 150. So most of the stocks in the Dow are up. A couple of them are down. Actually, I'm going to say maybe five of them are down. The rest are up. So good day so far. Over in Europe, rest of the world not doing so hot, though. DAX down 73.7%. FTSE down 43.7%. CAC around down 27.6%. So they're actually down a little more than last time we went through this. Asia, Nikkei down 167.9%. Shanghai down 30, that's 1%. Hang Seng down 145.6%. Bonds, 10-year 0.60 yield. The Bund, minus 0.46. Japan is sunk below the zero number again, minus 0.02. Oil, up 55 cents in the June contract at 1705. We've got natural gas, 177. RBOB gas, 63 cents. We got gold up $8, was up more earlier, 1754. Silver up 9 cents, 1545. Maddie, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We still have foggy conditions out in the Chicagoland area this morning that caused a couple of accidents earlier, but those are all cleared now, so no issues to report, no resulting congestion, just a bit slower than it's been, still with light traffic volume. The one crash we're still working on in the area is on the Eisenhower inbound side at Mill Road. There's a crash blocked that actually has both shoulders blocked, so the debris fell off a truck from this crash, and they moved debris on both shoulders. And so it's causing a slowdown on the Eisenhower inbound side at Mill Road out west. So keep that in mind. But everything else looking okay coming in on the Edens and Kennedy. Same for the Stevenson. That earlier crash at Ashland is all clear. Southside expressways have been quiet all morning, and no crashes or issues to report off the expressways either. But still, a dense fog advisory warning until 10 a.m. this morning that could cause some low visibility if you're heading out. Weather today, another miserable day in Chicago, as it's been for about seven straight months. We have rain in the forecast, we have fog, we have clouds, we have temperatures of a high of just 46 with wind chills in the 30s. It'll be even worse tomorrow, so you have that to look forward to. Right now it's foggy and 37, going up to a high of 46. For our Phoenix listeners, a hot one today, sunny with a high of 99. Right now it's clear and 71.
But it's early for that, isn't it?
I would think so.
Yeah.
In sports, of course, the NFL draft kicked off last night with round one coverage, all 32 teams drafting remotely. Joe Burrow was the number one overall pick, to the surprise of no one, the LSU quarterback, national champion, great kid, Ohio State transfer. He couldn't start at Ohio State, so he goes to LSU and blows up. I find that pretty funny. Number two pick was Chase Young to the Redskins. Most people think will be a future Hall of Famer, pass rusher, just an unbelievable defensive alignment, at least talent-wise. We'll see how he pans out. Bears, of course, didn't have a first-round pick because they traded him for Khalil Mack to the Raiders. So the Bears have two second-round picks tonight on ESPN, number 43 and number 50 overall. Should be able to find some decent talent there. The Arizona Cardinals, with the eighth pick, took Isaiah Simmons, linebacker. The Cardinals do not have a second-round pick tonight.
Chief.
The Dan, how are you?
I'm good. Good to talk to you.
Yeah.
You could hear Dan earlier, too.
Yeah, you could hear Dan. Well, is that good?
No. Yeah, I enjoyed that very much.
All right. Oh, that Dan. I talked about my brother talking to Maddie. Oh, Dan was terrific. We didn't even scratch the surface there. I mean, he's had a lot of different...
We'll definitely have him back on. I thought he was terrific. And he's based out in Georgia, and I would like to hear his thoughts on the Georgia governor reopening and then the Atlanta mayor saying, you know, we can't reopen in Atlanta and that whole thing. He's in Savannah, Dan Janitas is, in Kratos Capital, but I'd like to hear as a business owner kind of what he's thinking.
Well, if you listen to CNBC or this show, you get the feeling that there's, I mean, at least we talk about options and risks and things like that, which I think is pretty far above what you see and listen on CNBC. There's massive amounts of the financial markets that you don't hear about in any of the stuff that we do. I mean, stocks, common stocks are just one way that a company essentially gets financing. There's all this whole other area of preferred stock, all the bond. I mean, the bonds trade more than stocks every day. But I mean, we do some bonds here for clients that bring them in or are looking for something because we use RBC. Our clearing firm will help us out finding something for somebody who wants, and it's so specific. And we have people like Brendan on that are very big in the municipal bond market, but the area where Dan is in, I've always found incredibly fascinating. The bonds from companies that are they going to pay, aren't they going to pay, how much they end up paying, how much of a discount they have, what the market feels that their chances of paying are versus what they really are if you're in more of an insider like Dan is. That is an amazingly fascinating place to be. I mean, I think it's as fascinating as options are. And if I weren't in options, that's where I'd like to be. I think what he does is incredible. And
you can, by the way, Chief, you can follow us on Twitter at Stocks, the letter N, Jocks. At Sparky134 says, great interview, Chief. Reminds me of that talked about guy who made a lot of money in distressed railroads.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there are people that can do those kinds of things. I mean, he's talking about one of the guys on the floor who made money by buying the Chicago Northwestern bonds, and then they got bought by Union Pacific, and they all got paid off. It's that whole area is very fat. But I mean, of course, you could miss too, and the bonds don't get paid off. I mean, it sounds like, you know, it's one of those things. The harder you work, the better you do. You know, and Dan seems like the kind of guy that's not afraid to lose some shoe leather. So, that helps out. Because right now, what we're seeing not only in the oil patch, I think we're seeing it in a lot of these retailers. I think we're seeing everywhere. Okay, is Macy's going to make it? Are these ladies' fashion places, are they doing any good online? Do women rather try something on? Do guys rather try something? It's not just women. You want to see it before you buy it? I necessarily do. I would no more buy a suit online than a man in the moon, but I suppose if I had a place, that I bought two there and I knew just how they fit. Now, and I suppose I could order one there. It wouldn't be like I would, and I just never have. I mean, this, are we going to come back to normal in these places? I think it's all has to do, and I said this a couple times, man, I think it has to do with how long we are closed. When I say we, those people are closed. I mean, I got to believe that if we're up and running in June, I use these guys just as a name, the Tripoli tap survives. If it's next June, I don't think so. Do you?
Nope.
No, I mean, it's no way.
And about every restaurant or small retail place that I can think of would be gone. It's 6 months from now if they can't reopen, I think.
But what if you're a mall person? None of those stores, I think the mall should have walked in with 50 whatever shelving units with canned goods and shoved in every one of their stores and said, we're all going to be open. Screw you guys.
Well, get this. So David tweets us. Apparently, between the fight between a mall and a retailer, like you just mentioned, the Gap, of course, everyone knows the Gap, is refusing to pay $115 million a month in rent. Gap wants to renegotiate future leases and not pay now. And obviously, this would be a huge deal if all of these retailers started saying, okay, screw it, we're not paying.
Well, what if they just walked in with a canned goods aisle for 50 feet and told Pritzker, screw you, we're open?
Yeah. I don't know. I'm interested to hear John's thoughts on this, and I know Chiefs, but Chief tends to be on the far one side on this, and I think I'm more in the middle. But I don't, like, you know, I don't understand why we can't just have a common sense conversation. If I JB just coming out yesterday and saying May 30th, deal with it, and I'll talk to you then. That just blows my mind. Why can't we say? I think all of us could deal with being shut down for 4 to 6 weeks to flatten the curve, and then let's reevaluate, and then let's, you know, start talking about reopening. I think it sucked, but we could all maybe sort of deal with that. But we flattened the curve. We did that, right? So why aren't we saying, okay, we flatten the curve. Obviously, there's going to be a little bit of a spike when we reopen, but we think that it's going to be manageable, and we'll have enough hospital beds. If it turns out 4 weeks from now we're wrong, then we'll probably, you know, scale back. If we're right, then we'll keep scaling forward. Why aren't we having that conversation? It just blows my mind.
I agree completely, Maddie. And you know, the thing too is that not only have has the curve been flattened, but it's been we really don't know how much it's been flattened, because the numbers we have on fatalities, as has been talked about on the show by other people, are inflated. They grossly exaggerate exactly how many deaths coronavirus has caused versus when it's been present or there's evidence of it, and that becomes a mortality casualty instead of something else. So I suspect the curve is a lot flatter than anybody ever really has a chance to say on TV or to demand better numbers about. So we're already dealing with numbers that are much more persuasive to reopening fast, you know, soon, like this week. But we never hear those numbers, and nobody on these press conferences ever really is taken to task for masking, you know, what's really going on. And no pun intended there, but I'm very upset about it, that I think we're now forced to listen to executive mandates where there's been absolutely no grassroots participation or chance to weigh in or ask for fine-tuning or delaying or anything. It's all just by edict, and we're like in the era of divine right kings or something.
Well, for instance, the Orland Bakery. Oh, they're still open. Now, there's two young ladies outside, and there's little X's in the sidewalk. You know, again, I'm not big on this 6 foot apart, but if this is what people, you know, want to do, there's X's. And by the way, I went in the place. I obeyed the rules. I'm not going to be some knucklehead. Every 6 feet apart, and there's only a certain amount of people left in the store to where everybody there is pretty much 6 feet apart, and they put a counter out a little bit, and you walk in, instead of, you know, getting home to help you, to anybody, they'll say, you go see Jan or Judy or whoever the hell it is, or Joe. You walk in, somebody greets you, they're 6 feet away, you get your stuff, you walk out. Why can't we do that for furniture? What's the difference? There's a common sense thing going on there. Why should I be closed? I mean, I don't get it. I mean, what are we doing here? We're picking winners.
I don't get it either, Tom. And I think these news conferences are so managed in a way to prevent a really open discussion about these issues that they become pretty useless. I don't watch them really. I don't believe a lot of what's on there. I don't trust, you know, the people who could be making better use of these news conferences to really take some of these people to task and ask for better, more persuasive evidence than we're being.
Well, Jan, what you're getting, and this is somewhat of a theme, because our friend David, who sends me all kinds of stuff, most of which I write back and say, where'd you get this crap, basically? but a lot of it, you know, makes some serious sense. And, you know, one thing he sent me yesterday was the incredible schism we're having in our country between people are staying at home and hate it and aren't getting paid, and people are staying at home and are getting paid.
Right.
And I mean, this, we can't let ourselves split like this, and we are. I mean, I've heard people call me yesterday about teachers. I don't remember what I said in the first part of the show, but because in our area, the teacher, you know, instead of being 7 to 4:30, they're away from home and working. There's an hour and a half slot in the morning, and there's a half hour slot in the afternoon. And all the, you know, the school nurses, the school assistant principals, all those people, they're all getting paid. They're not doing squat. And yet the other people that are paying them are home wondering where my next paycheck's coming from. This tension between public and private, Jan, this has got to stop, or it's going to blow us up. It's going to blow us up.
Well, you know, and I am one of the guilty parties here, because I have a state pension. I don't pay state income tax, which I think is going to have to change. It should have changed a long time ago. I'm willing to pay state income tax. But now you've got a situation where people who can't work, they can't look for a job, they can't be hired, they can't pursue their lives as they would like to. They're supporting people like me.
Yeah.
It's their tax dollars that have made my kind of, you know, life of Riley possible. And I'm not employed. I'm a pensioner. But if I were certainly collecting a public sector paycheck, I think I'd probably have a lot more people angrier at me than they already are. This is totally unfair. It's not how a system works. It is not a system at all. It is just gouging of the people who were unfortunate enough not to have a public sector job in their past. And that should never be something that distinguishes the employable from the unemployable.
I mean, Jay Pritzker can't divorce himself, and I don't even know the man, but mentally it seems to me he can't divorce himself that he's got this amendment going through, and he managed to get this amendment on there. He could charge people more income tax. Of course, he couldn't get the one on there about the pensions, right? So he's got this one, and he's convinced no matter how much he spends, somehow or another, he's going to ratchet this up, and if for 5 years, people who are still employed are going to pay, what, 20%, 10%, 50%, who the hell knows what the number is, to the state, and he'll get his money back. But the thing that I don't quite get, it's there is the right or wrong of it, like you just put out there. The other part is, what happens if they just can't? I mean, how many people making $30,000 a year does it take to pay a pension of somebody making $100,000? And oh, by the way, if the guy making $30,000 is laid off for 6 months, how more difficult? At some point, you just can't. The check isn't there. It's way past the right or wrong part. It's with people leaving the state. We're talking about. I mean, long before you came on the show, we had a guest from the. I think Kathy Durbin got him on. He was the head of the Chicago Teachers Union pension. And I said, well, it's one of these days, I mean, there's a problem with, if people leave and this doesn't work out. I said, the last person in the state that isn't on a pension, he better have a lot of money. And the guy goes, well, let's hope he does. Okay. I mean, the numbers don't lie. I mean, every year, Illinois loses, what, 80,000 people or something, or 100 or more?
Well, Tom, think about what this will mean. You know, what's happening now is going to mean for that trend too, because as unemployment compensation starts to run out, and it's going to run out at this rate, and you know, there's no guarantee things will be back to any kind of normal come June 1, the way Pritzker's talking or the way Lightfoot is talking. So who knows how long this kind of condition is going to last, and it's going to completely destroy, just burn up all the unemployment compensation money that we could ever hope to get, whether by federal bailout or from taxes. And you can be sure that it's going to require bigger taxes for the employers that are still on their feet when this is over.
But if you
had you think they're going to stay in Illinois?
But as the Irish always said, you can't get blood out of a turnip.
Right.
I mean, at some point, I mean, okay, so my business goes down. Either my, you know, my restaurant, whatever. What would possess me to reopen that in Chicago, knowing that the huge hole the city has? And now my own, why do I want to be in Chicago anyway if I have a big business? Well, here's why. Because I'm in the midst of an awful lot of people that somehow get to work on public transportation, which is as good a deal as there possibly is. So I can essentially draw from, what, how many people in the whole metropolitan area? It's like seven, right? Six and a half, seven. So I can draw from Napertucky. I can draw from St. Charles. I can draw from Bartlett, for God's sake. You know, right? Because all of a sudden, wait a minute. Nobody wants to run. We're not going to let people ride in the trains, or people are afraid to drive in the trains. Let's just totally wipe out the subway system. Say nobody's going to get on that. Well, then what would possess me to want a business in downtown Chicago and pay the rents I'm paying here? If all of a sudden everybody's got to drive to work, which immediately takes all those people out of my. Nobody, who's going to drive in from Napertucky every day and pay the tolls and pay everything else that they need to get here? I mean, what men are more? I mean, there are some people that do, but in general, you're not going to get somebody in a $50,000 range to do that, would you? Why? And pay?
No, there'll be a lot fewer of them at this rate.
So, I mean,
and it makes no good business sense whatever to think long term of having a healthy business position in the state of Illinois. It's just not in the cards. You'd have to be a real pipe dreamer to think that you're ever going to make a lot of money or be able to expand or, you know, retire when you wanted to or anything else. It's just not in the cards. You'll be taxed, you know, completely out of your, you know, any hopes you have for that.
Right.
And even if you're not a business owner, if you're a property owner, what will this do to real estate taxes? Think of what is being foregone now in tax revenue, in sales tax revenue, fees, yeah, administrative, whatever. You name it. The state has just gone into lockdown where they're just not accepting payment because there's nothing to justify paying fees when you can't conduct business this way.
Well, they're totally...
How do we dig out from under that?
Well, they're totally locked down, and they're so... We had a new tenant move in the building, so she doesn't have. She's from an out of state, so in order to park in front of the house, you need one of these stupid zone things, right? Well, how the hell is, you know, she going to get a city sticker now? They're all closed. They're all home, getting paid for nothing, right?
Right. So, driver's license, you don't have to go in and pay that money to get it renewed. It's just going to be extended indefinitely until you can safely go in.
But I mean, I don't.
It's crazy stuff.
I don't put it past one of these bleeps walking by to give her a ticket because she doesn't have the zone sticker. And I don't know if they've stopped that or not. You can't trust these people. So I go on. I call the alderman. Well, they're not there either. Right? Where the hell are they?
Yeah, my ward office up here is closed. Nice, yeah, big friendly sign in the window. Closed for business.
Yeah. And, so okay, they're closed. They're getting paid by who? You know. I mean, so all of a sudden, I call them and I say, well, if you need city stickers, go to the clerk's site. So I go to the clerk's site, and there's a form EZ that you can order this stuff online. So I go, this is, you know, of course, I'm angry with this to start with, so, you know, no point in bringing that up. So I go through the whole thing, name, address, you know, whatever, how fat you are, how skinny you are, whatever, whole through the whole routine. And then it gets to the end. After credit cards and everything, well, give me the, type in the last four digits of the sheet you got the last time you bought them in person. And I go, well, first of all, now this brings up yet another issue because because I'm doing some cleaning, I just threw out about five sheets of them from last year. And even though the state has a law that says when you buy something like that, like a gift certificate can no longer expire, the city says up yours, and they're the things you buy for the permits in front of your house. They expire every year. So if you bought 20 for last year, I mean, they're not expensive. Say they're 40 cents a piece for somebody to have dinner at your house. Of course, nobody's coming to anybody's house now, but still, at the end of the year, if you put that on there, you'll get a ticket because it's not next year's. So because I threw those out and didn't, what would possess me to ever have to copy down the number on the bottom? So if you've never bought them in person, you can't buy them online.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. So now
I'm shocked but not surprised.
But I mean, they are so inefficient, so screwed up, and they think that no matter what happens, they're the last people to get paid. Now, what's her name? I don't know what her name is. She won this tough event. If that entire office disappeared and those five people were sequestered on a cruise ship for the next 4 years, who would even notice, Jan? Who would even notice? Right. Who would care? Michelle Smith. I mean, what is with any of these people? I mean, I don't, you know. So the city of Chicago is going to have, there's going to come a day when we have 51 people left here, and 50 of them are aldermen, because they can't shrink the size of city government. The other person, male or female, better have a lot of money, because they're still going to want their salaries.
I'm in your camp on that 100%.
But you know, when stuff like this happens, Jan, I know I'm not, because I just had a guy on the show that knew a hell of a lot more about than I ever dreamed to know, and whole areas of the business that I should know about. So it's not like I have this view that we have all this knowledge, but I'm just saying that the way this is going, and that we keep giving, you know, certain groups of the population raises and raising taxes for the other people without any wherewithal to whether they have the money to pay it. It's not just wrong, it's ignorant. Because one of these days, you know, I don't know, hopefully people don't grab weapons. Or if they do, they're water balloons and not guns. But, I mean, this is crazy. Where do you lose your ability? I mean, Lori Lightfoot, these commercials she's doing, does she have any idea what message she's sending to people?
It blows my mind. And, you know, she's not the only one. You know, you hear reports of similar tone-deaf you know, PSAs that these politicians are putting out. But if somebody ever could really get next to them and say, I want you to take a long, hard look at this, and then here's what I have to say about it, because they are shooting themselves in the foot. They are losing all credibility with stressed-out people. They really have a sense these people don't hear or think about people like you, me, whatever. They don't figure in their consciousness. They don't care about it. And, you know, to think that this is, you know, you have to take advertisements, you know, reinforcing this belief as if it's for your benefit, it's beyond Orwellian. It's really kind of insulting.
Well, the whole idea was old white guys lost track of what it's like to be black or no black people. They don't really understand what it's like to be female, so it's time to get somebody else in there. Okay, we got a black female. She's doing the same thing, as bad or worse as the old grumpy white guys did. Maybe I never saw Mayor Daley make a commercial about himself.
I hate to say it. I think she's grumpier.
Okay. John, take care of yourself. Talk to you on Monday. SP Futures up 25. NASDAQ Futures up 61. Back Monday, Stocks and Jocks.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.